Recording started.
Welcome to week 5 of Learning and Knowledge Analytics Open Course. This week we're looking at some of the systemic aspects to deploying and implementing learning analytics. We're pleased to have Dr. Linda Baer with us. She's currently a Senior Program Officer with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Prior to that, she's been very active in the state and college university systems, particularly within Minnesota State, and has certainly been active in publishing on analytics, action analytics, and academic analytics. So I think this presentation will fit very well within the overall scope of our course. As I mentioned earlier, though, unfortunately, any questions that we ask audibly won't be heard by Linda, so we'll have to do that through text. So with that stated, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Linda.
Hello, this is Linda Baer. I'm happy to be with you. Good to be able to share some ideas on the systemic implementation of learning analytics. Sorry about the technology issues, but we'll carry on. What we have is a few slides today, and I will be breaking halfway through to open up for some questions as we move along. So with that, we'll just get started. Some might say, why is analytics so important at this point in time? And it's really much about what's going on out there in the environment. Some have said this is not a cycle, it's a reset. A lot of times people think in higher education, oh, the budget will get better or the circumstances will improve. But we don't think that that's exactly what's going to happen this time. It's not like other times economically or globally. And so we really believe we've got to be about a reset, which tells us then that we need to work hard about what are the metrics and what are the analytics for improving success for students in these times. What we also could say is some of the very issues are about what kind of environments we're existing in. We're educating for careers that have not been created using technology not yet invented to solve problems that haven't been discovered. And if your most immediate supervisor or boss would say measure that, you'd have to say, well, where do we even begin? Where do we even begin as rapidly as things are changing today? For the United States, we have a leader who's decided that education is very important, and that's a good thing. It's time to have leaders stand up and say these things are important. And so here you'll say by 2020, America will once again have the highest proportion of college graduates in the world is one of the goals that the president has discussed. In fact, by our estimates, nearly two-thirds of the jobs in the future will require a college education. So we have to get more serious about how to improve students' access to higher education and their success. Business also continues to say to us there's much more we should be doing and could be doing, and it's time for us to get a little better about what are the metrics that help us improve our relationships with business, meaning competencies that our students have once they've gone through our higher education systems. Even with such high unemployment, what we're finding here as well as other places is that employers are having difficulty finding qualified workers. Upwards of 3 million jobs are going unfilled in the United States. I don't think that they stay totally unfilled because employers will go elsewhere, but it's a qualification gap that we have, and we also have trouble with students, enough students, or the majority, more and more students are not getting through high school. We need to work on that. And as I said before, more students are going to college. For us, the community college system has been a high access system. They're doing well with the access agenda, but many students are not getting through. They're not actually completing with a degree or certificate that they had started to get when they opened up. One of my favorite authors is Thomas Davenport, and as well as Jeannie Harris, who wrote Competing on Analytics. And so to get a context for the systemic approach, for them, they were working with business industry about how much intelligence could you gather in terms of data and metrics, and what helped you gain a competitive advantage. Now, most all of those words aren't necessarily words we use in higher ed much today, but more and more people are beginning to see that this is very important. And so you'll see on this grid that was developed by Davenport and Harris a progression from standard reporting to ad hoc reports, up to alerts, up to analyses, up to predictive modeling, where we get really serious about what's going on, and then move to ultimately what could be optimization. What's the best that we can expect, or what's the best we can have happen? So as we move through that, you'll see that in the next book called Analytics at Work, just out by Davenport Harris and Morrison, you'll see that they put the context into, again, some very key questions we should continue to be thinking about. And notice the difference between information, which is just kind of what was below the blue line on the last chart, what's happening now, what will happen as we continue to move toward the future, versus how and why did it happen, what's the next best action, and what's the best worst that can happen. I happen to be at a conference right now for Achieving the Dream in Indianapolis, and there they're asking, where are the places where students continue and are successful in different milestone areas of higher education, and where do we lose them? And often we lose them in developmental education, for example. So if you started asking how and why are we losing so many, and what's the next best way to approach developmental education, and what's the best or worst thing that can happen, then you start seeing a systematic way of approaching how you would use data to improve situations for students and student learning. So I point out a little bit in this slide the idea of what is predictive modeling. Predictive modeling is a process by which a model is created or chosen to try to best predict the probability of an outcome. I often ask myself when Amazon.com pops up with the notices, you know, people like you who bought these books also like these kinds of books. And so you find deep algorithms in a lot of the consumer things that are going on in relation to analytics today, particularly in consumer markets. What about higher education? How can we better detect who can be successful, or what interventions help people improve their likelihood of success? I see someone has Sylvia's posted the web reference for Analytics at Work. Very good book with a lot of good information, including this easy to remember delta called the analytical delta. You can't just say, let's just do more data, or, you know, let's just have more people see the data. It's got to be a systematic approach. And so what the Analytics at Work came up with was Delta, of course, change, which includes accessible, high-quality data, an enterprise orientation to using the data, accessing the data, having lots of people have access to the data, the people that need the data have the data in enough time that it can make a difference. The L is for leadership, that it can't just be done at the institutional research level or at a faculty level or at a student level. It's got to be all people together, but also leadership where decisions are made about where the funding comes from. We've been funding from the Gates Foundation opportunities for trustees at different community colleges to be trained in data, understanding data better, knowing their data, for example, how many get through developmental and at which stages are students lost in developmental, or how many get through some of the very critical gateway courses. And that brings us to the T, which would be strategic targets. If you know you are losing X percent of students in certain time periods in higher ed, how would you intervene and with what way, and what might you say should be a target for improvement? As the president has said, we want to be number one in the world in terms of college graduates. That may be one goal. Others have had other goals that had to do with doubling the numbers of people receiving degrees by age 26. That's one of the Gates goals. And I'll talk about that in a little more. Finally, it's the A for analyst, and this tells us that all of us need to have a better understanding of numbers and support the IR, institutional research folks, but also allow them to get beyond just crunching numbers or data reports to actually being very important team members on the predictive modeling and analytics of what next in relation to these things. So there are some questions you might be considering depending on where you are and what you're about and what you hope to be doing with analytics, and I've just selected a few questions we might consider. What student outcomes data are you using now? How are you using it? With whom do you need to be sharing the data? Do you know the key loss points for students? And what strategic tools are being used to help you see how students might improve what they're doing, faculty or advisors help better in how to approach improving what's going on? George is saying it doesn't feel too many people probably can answer these questions, and he's absolutely right. Some of our work at Gates has certainly been, let's take a look at the loss points, and so I will show you a little chart on that. These questions, yes, work across K-12. They work across into the workforce. Who's successful? Why or why not? And one of the things I'm finding very interesting is looking at the strategic tools. What are vendors doing out there to develop the tools that help us better understand where students are, where they're going, what factors help us most predict how to better serve them so that they can be successful? A couple of other questions, take a look at what cost of student failure. Many people will say, well, serving the at-risk students or the hard-to-serve students costs more, certainly more costly to do developmental education, and very, very often legislators or policymakers argue about whose responsibility is it. And I would come back with, well, what's the cost if students continue to fail at the level they are? And the federal government has become quite concerned about those failure rates because often they translate into default rates for student loans. Likewise, the federal government's been talking lately about the establishment of value. If you major and complete a degree in a certain major, what is the likelihood of your annual income given that? And then how much did you have to borrow to be able to go to school to get that degree, and what's the likelihood of paying back? Then what's the cost of customizing the student success interventions? Today we do have the technology and the capacities to far better understand where students are at any point in time. The Signals Project at Purdue University is one of those where they've set up a tool that assists in chemistry classes and others about how well are students doing it each day. Capella University has a very robust student analysis. They can tell you likelihood of success of a student the first day of class, basically. So those things are important to know, what kind of tools are out there, what's out there to help. One of the things, though, also is, of course, anytime there's a tool, it means there's a cost. And what we'd like to be able to do is find more that might be open source or basic to helping us serve students better. The question on, can analytics help us get out of the factory model of learning, would be really important, really important, because it still is what we call a cottage industry of faculty teach. Often they teach as isolated educators. I think the day is coming where far more teamwork is happening, and that's what we are seeing with particularly some of the for-profits and some of the others that are saying faculty are good team content experts, but they may not be the expert in doing an online approach to education or the pedagogy or the evaluation. Yes, the question about on the first day of class, yes, Capella contends that on the first day of class they can pretty well tell how students are going to be able to do. They get enough of the learner background and information, but also showing up on the first day of class, particularly when you're online, is pretty important on the predicting factor. So not only do they predict how well they're doing and plot it across, but they also have several opportunities for intervention. They don't just say, whoops, looks like you're going to be in trouble, but rather, here are some of the things we know may be of weakness for you, and here's what we can do to help make sure you can be more successful. So there we are. That's a point in terms of some of this indicator work. And I'm going to pause right now because I kind of zipped through all of that pretty quickly, and I know there were several questions coming through. George, would you like to moderate a couple of the questions now and see what we can do?
Just a quick note, I'll do the questions via text because Linda doesn't have audio coming out, so just give me a second while I pull a few questions together.
Well, it's a very good question. I saw several of you asking that question. The costs are varied because sometimes there are relatively simple, focused things people can do. We know, for example, if students attend orientation, a mandatory orientation, they tend to do better. The cost would be doing orientation and then measuring how well our students doing. Many of our schools are doing community college student engagement survey. Very important so that you can begin to monitor what activities are students doing. Now there's a cost to be in CESE or in NESE if you're in the National Student Engagement Survey. So yes, NESE is also good in terms of the university level. The other kinds of things have to do with do you allow students to enroll late and how late? Because research shows the later a student enrolls, the less likely they will be to be successful. Why do we do late registration? Either they're there or they're not in relation to being successful. We know if they get in at the right time. There are also, yes, exactly, good examples of best habits for learners, that they have to be disciplined and know what to do and when to do it, that it is important to attend class or it's important to be a participant. Learning communities help us do some of that. So what data are you going to capture? Some of it's already mandatory exactly, where you might have what's going to happen in terms of what data you might have because of state requirements or federal requirements or programmatic requirements. So mandatory orientation, not necessarily face-to-face. If you're online, you can do very good online orientations. And we're finding more and more with simulations and automations and even doing some work in Second Life that you can be very involved and very hands-on, but it's about the student being engaged and staying engaged instead of dropping out mentally even before they drop out physically. Other costs. Well, the costs have to do with what kind of data warehouse do you have, what kind of mining capacity do you have, what kind of skill sets do you have of the people in your shop right now. We've found that on an average there probably is 1.5 institutional research people per community college. That's a scary thought because most of the time it's cranking out a report. Instead of going to the higher level of analysis. There's also a culture of data being important for improvement versus data under a gotcha kind of system that says, well, you report in and then it becomes difficult for us to continue to support what's going on if it looks like it's negative. Do we currently have the right tools that are needed to perform analytics at school college levels? If not, what do we need? That's where I said it was mixed. If you have only 1.5 institutional researchers on average, and Davis Jenkins and Nancy Shulock have done some reporting on that from the Community College Research Center, what are the capabilities you need? And sometimes we think it may be an additional certificate or a competency-based set of courses that help people improve what their level of the human capacity would be. Then, of course, there's a lot of work on what's going on in your learning management system or your ERP, where you already are with where data reside, and the mining capacity. There are many products out there that help you mine. Sometimes we don't know whether faculty are actually using those tools. For example, Blackboard or Desire to Learn or many of those kind of tools do have opportunities for the faculty to mine the data about how students are doing. In fact, the Signals Project was actually based on, I think, the Blackboard basis. Well, that's true. It, as George is saying, sometimes the problem is it's very hectic, and how can faculty who are already overworked and very, very busy about what they're doing, how can we get tools that are really ready and easy to use and almost intuitive or second nature? That's a challenge, and that's one of the things we are asking, in fact, of vendors. We're going to be doing sponsoring a major survey of vendors. We interviewed them at EDUCAUSE this last year to find out what are they offering to date and what do they see in the future, but likewise do some surveying of campuses. What tool sets are they using and what might help them accomplish what they need to accomplish better? So in general, George, you're right that not too many schools have the comprehensive approach to being able to reach their full capacity. One of the things we're starting to work on, though, is what are some of the stages of analytic development. And in fact, the book that I referenced by Davenport Harris and Morrison talk about what stages of development are out there to help you understand moving towards being able to be more optimizing in your work. And you're right, we do have to work more with vendors about how they can better get to where the faculty are so that they can hear what happens on the ground. Well, in my opinion, I think it's both. Has to be both because the entrepreneurs will lead us and help us understand better about things we hadn't thought about, and researchers need to continue to keep us on target and on point about where we should put most of our efforts. Now, that's a really good statement about helping students with no experience into the world and feeling confident quickly. There are projects that are going on where people might say, what's the profile of a successful student? And you'd be able to describe what they would be. And then you might say, what's the profile of a student that may be at risk? And you can talk about what that might be. But there are ways of assisting students to become the successful student. You can do more about how disciplined they can be, that yes, you have to show up, yes, you have to complete what you start, yes, you have to be there, you have to be present, and there's a reason for that. And yes, you have to go to tutoring or help when it's been offered to make sure you can be successful. Okay, we'll go on to the next set of slides, but jot down, continue the conversation because we can certainly continue to see where we are with things, and I think I've just gone too far, so I'll go back a ways. I'm going to show you several examples going forward instead of backwards now. Back to the future we are. Here we go. Well, let's look at some data and metric examples, and I alluded to some of this when we talked about it, but I'm going to talk about a couple of foundations, and it's important to have foundations that are well endowed with resources to help campuses, but on the other hand, we're concerned as foundations about how can we get to sustainability of models, and so I think that's an important thing. We have Complete College America, again, a United States. I don't know how many of you are U.S.-based or in other places, but I'm using the U.S. examples anyway to just show you some of the things that are going on. I could put certainly the Bologna process here, which is a very good example as well of some of the analytics in the European market that Lumina is sponsoring, that we have some work going on in the United States kind of simulating some of the Lumina work. But here we are with some other things going on in relation to National Governors Association that picked up, Governor Manchin at the time, West Virginia, picked up that the Complete College America work was really important and decided that that would be his theme in the National Governors Association and called it Complete to Compete, that every 50 state governor was going to focus on this as part of what they could do during this year. Then Governor Manchin ran for the Senate seat, and now Governor Gregoire from Washington State is actually leading the group. But it's interesting to know that if governors say maybe this is important, then that puts it on a higher level of priority. I'm going to show you a few SHIO metrics. We've got Washington State Achievement Initiative to show you a few things, and then some things that we were doing in Minnesota in terms of dashboard work. So for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, determined that one of their key efforts, now they have three main areas that they invest in. One is global development, one is global health, and one is U.S. programs. And here's where they talk specifically about U.S. programs to the post-secondary success unit. Now, they've got a lot of other things going on in the U.S. programs, but they have a big, bold goal of doubling the numbers of low-income adults who earn post-secondary degrees by age 26 by 2025. You've got to determine a target. You've got to determine a target. If you were going to double the numbers, what would your state or your area look like and your campus look like to contribute toward that? And why by age 26? Well, they believe if they got young adults in with something that translates into an ability to work, they can break the poverty cycle and through education. So considerable amount of money going in many different projects, including learning analytics for student success. And that's where the Gates Foundation is. For an example of where one of their big efforts is, you will see this called Completion by Design. It's a pathway model that analyzes where do you lose students or where might momentum be picked up for student success. And that's where you'll see that for this model, where do you pick up in the connection? How do you mentor or encourage students from high school to be interested in college or middle school, junior high to be interested in college to the application? And how many do you receive from the interest to actually applying to actually attending? That's a lot of the enrollment management work today. Then you move on to entry. What happens at entry and where are some of the issues there? And we know, in fact, we call it the Bermuda Triangle. Developmental education. Many go in, but not very many come back out again. Why is that? What's going on in the context of developmental curriculum or developmental education or motivation or just a lot of things going on there? Likewise, the gatekeeper courses. We know that entering and being successful in college math and college English are very important for ongoing student success. So those become really important gatekeeper courses as well as some of the others. Progress toward completion, again, milestones, monitoring, did they achieve 15 credits? Did they achieve 30 credits? Instead of just did they finish, there are small milestones along the way of completion. And then finally, the completion itself, did they complete the actual the course of study? Did they get a credential that ended up allowing them to get into the marketplace and have good jobs? Well, all those things are important to take a look at. So we have actually started at the Gates Foundation to look at four different things. One of them I started to talk about, which is improving this robust, transparent solutions in the marketplace, working more with vendors, bringing them to the table with campus folks, with faculty, with the actual users. Likewise, looking at a systemic way to strengthen institutional capacity to implement the use of data, continuing to improve performance, and finally, building knowledge and awareness overall. I was just speaking this morning at an event, and people said, well, how do you know which metrics to even go by? We're being deluged with metrics now. So there's Complete College America metrics, or the National Governor's metrics, or our state performance metrics, or federal accreditation metrics. And they're not always the same. And I know that that's a really big issue, because there are some states that just say, I want the 10 core metrics, I know what's going to work, and I want to be able to stick with them for a while. Don't keep giving us new and different metrics every day. Lumina also has been a big participant here, and you'll see that they, in fact, led with a goal that said 60% of Americans hold high-quality 2- and 4-year degree credentials by 2025. A focus that said improve to 60%. To reach the goal, they talk about how many more graduates would have to be there, and you can do the math and figure out within your own states what percent that might be. They led with some of the Achieving the Dream work, that three key things were important, as I've mentioned over and over: outcomes and developmental courses, Did they pass or not? And if not, why not? Do you know how many people go into developmental and how many actually get out and become successful in the next subsequent courses? Outcomes and gatekeeper courses, and then persistence and graduation. Probably states and campuses are reporting on the last one, because those are statewide measures that many times you're held accountable for in terms of persistence and graduation. One of the initiatives called Complete College America, a major initiative. I think we have 26 states possibly signed up there. You'll see the web reference there. Others George has been putting a few more reference points up there. For Complete College America, it's a sharing responsibility. Students have some of the responsibility, yes. Colleges and universities must make graduation completion part of a measure of success, not just the headcount in. And likewise, since states must continue to work on how do they enable better pathways for success, how are we still operating many times in a 20th century model while trying to educate in a 21st century? And many of you, I know, bump your heads up against that a lot in terms of a lot of times online education, if nothing else. When the coin of the realm happens to be seat time, how can you even move beyond that for online and for competency-based learning? Another set of metrics have to do with SHEO, the State Higher Education Executive Officers Group, and there's a reference here for that, Stronger Foundations. And it's really the state of the state in post-secondary data systems. But these are some of the examples of data elements. And in that report, you'll find out which states actually share between K-12 and college, for example, so that you can find out and kind of watch a student's progress. What courses did they take that then resulted while they were in high school that proved to be more college-ready preparation for post-secondary? And you see some more elements here. And then the states that actually have all three going on are in pretty good shape, but it's hard to end up having all the data aligned in a data system that's equally accessible. It took Minnesota over 3 years to work through the legislature and other areas to end up getting the kind of numbers that they were, or the kinds of relationships and data elements that they could finally share across the borders of their different silos, so to speak. I mentioned Washington State. There are many states that are doing some very good achievement initiative metrics. When I said break it down a little more, I referenced the Tipping Point by David Prince. They have done outstanding work in looking at what are college-level skills, how do you know it when you see it, working with K-12 to better partner so you can have a pathway for better success. And then again, first-year retention, you got to 15 credits, yay, or you got to 30 credits. There are milestone events instead of, oh, it's a long haul and it's going to take you a very long time and, you know, will you ever see the end of the tunnel? So here's what you kind of see here in terms of that. You see completing college-level math and English is very important, and then actually the degrees themselves, but also if you're looking at lifelong learning, how you begin to look at that and continue to address the flexibility that you need to have to monitor how well people are doing and what you can do to improve their activities. Now, for the state of Washington, they've actually put performance metrics in, and with state funding as well as system funding as well as some Gates Foundation funding, they put money on the table depending on campuses meeting these different milestones and these metrics. And it was very successful. It didn't take long for people to begin to improve on all of these metrics. Then, of course, you end up with the difficult financial situations and lots of cutbacks happening. And, you know, then some would say, well, do you continue this or not? But their board has determined this is very important to continue, and they will do that, in fact. So that's an important piece that's out there, and there are many states. One of the things we'd like to do is get a better compendium of some best cases of what's going on in different states as they move towards some more of the metrics-based and competency-based work. I'll just wrap up quickly with a little review of what was going on with Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. This ratchets it up to a system level. This is a system that has 32 campuses, 26 two-year campuses, technical and community colleges, and a tribal community college, as well as seven state universities. The Board of Trustees determined in their strategic planning initiative five different measures or strategic directions. And you'll see the first three look pretty common: access, opportunity, success, ensure high quality programs and services, work toward enhancing the economic competitiveness of state, regions, and people. The fourth one was very interesting, and I would like to speak to this a little more. Innovate to meet current and future educational needs. I said, if I surveyed the trustees, they'd all have many different ways they would probably reflect what that means to them. And in today's presentation that I was doing on analytics, one of the participants said, I'm really worried that more and more metrics, and particularly if they're top-down metrics, will tend to dilute the ability to innovate. And she believed that had been the case with K-12, with so much of the No Child Left Behind operations. Minnesota recently added, of course, ensure the long-term viability of public higher education, because I think that's one of the bottom line immediate issues. How are we doing in these very difficult times, and with constant barraging and cutbacks, how are you going to maintain quality? And I would say that some of this means you continue to work very hard with partnerships. With K-12, you improve those. Some schools have done middle colleges, grades 11 to 14. I just think that's very important in this day and age. Students aren't coming out ready for college, but how did we think when you stopped education, one type of education at grade 12 and begin again at grade 13, that we would all nicely walk, crosswalk the way we needed to. You'll see that that's what one state did, and what they then did was move toward aligning what they were assessing to what they held campuses accountable for and what kind of actions were done to kind of tie the whole thing together. And so you'll see that that's what's going to be reflected here, that we actually aligned the measures, and you see in bullet two the measures that were used, and we put it on a handy-dandy scorecard dashboard. And there was a lot of talking about how you do this, what measures, and so you'll see that we align, for example, access and opportunity. Well, one of the measures was percent change in enrollment. And then there was green, blue, and yellow lights, which said gold to yellow ends up exceeding expectations, blue was meeting, and red was below expectations. These were calibrated very carefully using institutional research people from campuses to help understand how you might measure these, what might be an adequate or valid comparison. You'll see up here that we could run the numbers from the system overall, just the two-year colleges, just the universities, or each and every individual college by itself. And you can see current reporting as well as previous historic context. So this was a long time coming. Important. Not all of them are launched yet. Still some numbers that need to be worked on. For example, innovation. The student engagement has been turned on now because the board determined that each campus would use CESE, the Community College Survey of Student Engagement, or NESE, the National Survey of Student Engagement, to enable our numbers there to find out what did we learn from student engagement. We could also run these numbers in a lot of different ways, a lot of ways. This one shows you how many campuses were in the blue, or how many were in red, or how many were in gold. Interestingly, we did a full-blown webinar press conference on this, and this was really interesting because we thought this would be really difficult, really hard, and we even contacted those that were in the red because we said, well, your local folks are going to be there, and they may be wondering about this. You may get questions about why you're in the red, so be ready with some good answers. We give them a commentary box as well on each of these where they can report out why are they in the red. Interestingly, we seem to worry more about the red than we did about would they come up and say, wow, you're in the gold. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? So these are some of the things that we worked on to try to help people understand better how to portray numbers, how to work with numbers, how to use them. One of the things we're doing with the Association of Community College Trustees is actually a governance institute for student success. And we've invited states in for workshops that ACCT then produce where the number books are made available for the trustees about their student success numbers, how many enroll, how many succeed in developmental, how many succeed in the gateway courses, etc. And the trustees actually have in hand then what the numbers are and what they mean. That's pretty interesting when you start doing that. So for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, it actually was that there were performance thresholds. There were goals that were set by some, for example, facility index was set by the board. There might have been an external reference, like license exam pass rates, for one. There might have been an expected value using a regression model that would have predicted related employment based on program mix. Finally, there might have been a historical performance, depending on what the variable was. And so those were some of the long conversations that had to be had in relation to this. So that's some of where we were with the accountability dashboard at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Note that it was important that it rose out of the goals from the system strategic plan. It's a very usable, intuitive kind of operation now. It enables the institutions to drill down on measures by gender or race or time period. They can do a lot of analyses in it. The board actually holds the chancellor accountable, and actually when I was the senior vice chancellor as well, for system performance, so there was a evaluation based on that. So then there can be some aligning that happens, and so this gets into more of the detail, things that you know work. Like first-year experience, or as I said, orientation, or don't do late registration. And then what are some of the customized interventions you might be able to work on? So, well, you need a longitudinal data system to be able to understand more of what's out there, or build learning management systems from very often the learning management tools you may already have on campus to determine better how faculty can assess how students are doing. Note that I mixed and matched from what's going on in the individual learner in an individual classroom with an individual faculty member all the way up to what's going on in program evaluation or what's going on in a system, an actual campus evaluation. You have to realize which number, which level or unit of analysis you're going to be working on as well, and then reporting for whom and for what. The last thing I wanted to talk about has to do with partnerships, so I'll just take a few minutes on that. But in these times, if ever before, partnering becomes really important, and a lot of the work I've written on has to do with how do you partner better. My colleague Ann Hill-Dewin and I wrote a book on partnering in the learning market space, which was published by Educause quite a while ago now, 2001. But in that book, we talk about how difficult it is to partner, some measures about how to be ready to partner, and then a blueprint for partnering. As we got ready to launch some of the analytics work, we decided that it was important to bring as many people to the table as we could, and so we invited Capella University, that actually has their national headquarters in Minnesota, and the University of Minnesota, because they, of course, had a lot of resources, had very strong business intelligence work, and as I mentioned before, Capella already had a pretty robust faculty-based competency of what's going on for a student at almost any point in time in the course. Minsky had the dashboard and a way of reporting out and visualizing what was going on, and then we were pulling in some of the private colleges as well. These are the four of the systems, I guess you would say, that if you call the for-profits a system. We also have a career college system that operates out of Minnesota. But interesting to find out that this group decided one of the things they thought they could come to the table and talk about would be advising and the tools and analytics to help advisors be better and more productive in improving student success. So with that, again, I ran through a lot of examples. If you want to go back to any of them or ask specific questions about them, just let me know. Okay, so we're having a few questions about who drove the investment in these projects, and I think before that was one on the metrics. Let me see. Sorry, I'm running through this. What measures gets what money? Well, I'll tell you that I think there is quite a push for standards right now in relation to quality counts. There are some quality initiatives going on for K-12, where, of course, there's work on something called core standards. How do you balance the intangibles? A lot of this was about work, I know. And I think that's one of the things where I have said for a long time, we know well-rounded students are the best students for life and for work and for decision making. And so you do have to continue to say there's material that has to help you. And I think we get at that oftentimes with the emphasis on critical thinking and the expansion of how you improve what a student knows in their critical thinking before and after, like early in their experience and then later on. I think if you went to any room and asked, you know, how many people were liberal arts majors, you're going to find a big majority of people saying they are. And so somehow we still have to continue to make the case. Some have said that because we made such a big deal about students go to college to earn a lot of money, that we put it more toward an individual good than what was the beginnings of education or public education, which meant it was a social good, that we believed that all of society was improved by more people having education, and it made for a better democracy or made for better voters or a bit more informed citizenry or better workers as part of all that. So that's a lot of what's going on. Yes, Daniel Pink does say the MFA is the newest MBA, and he does write about that in relation to the importance of having that creative side. Well, I could take a stab at the our analytics and metrics set by politicians. Yes, often they are. They at least are looking at the value of degrees. They certainly want to know about persistence and graduation rates. That seems to be a big issue. At the federal level, there's more emphasis now on what's going on with value of a degree and the default rates of people. Are people actually in degree programs that can make enough money that they can actually pay back loans? Or are they overextended in loans in degree programs that cost so much they probably won't be able to repay? I would say that there's often a portion of budget that is driven by metrics or performance in some of the schools. But there's still always the tuition dollars that are coming in. I would agree that, that there is a need for the opportunity to have a competency-based analytics tool set. What do people need to know? There are some centers for data and data resources. There are some endowed chairs. I know that I think SAS had endowed a chair in North Carolina. Thank you all. Very, very good to be with you. Thank you.